Mommy and Daddy, Mommy and Daddy, Mommy and Daddy. He saw, she saw, he saw, she saw, she saw, he saw. He saw, she saw.
Hello and welcome back to He Saw, She Saw.
And if you're just joining in, I'm Corey and this is my husband, Keith.
And we love movies.
Just not the same kinds. So we make each other watch a favorite movie from our past.
One the other has zero interest in or shockingly has not seen.
And we talk about it.
So what, let's just go with Masterpiece. Am I going to get to watch this week?
Masterpiece, wow. Well, you're really watching your P's and Q's over there.
I'm hoping it's going to help with the movie selection. So what is it that I get to watch?
So you get to watch the Madonna movie, Desperately Seeking Susan.
Who's that girl?
Wow. Dad jokes already?
Oh, I'm going to need every single dad joke in my arsenal to get through this week. Cannot believe I have to watch this movie. Okay, so why? I'm a good husband. Why do I have to do this? Why am I watching this?
Well, because, first of all, you need to be cultured. Second of all, I just loved Madonna. And I love the Madonna movie. And I just, I'm going to admit something here, though. I am willing to admit that maybe the reason why I think it's such a wonderful movie is because I love Madonna so much and because I was just all caught up in being like material girl. So I'm willing to be open to the fact that maybe it's not as great movie as I remember it. I've seen it in the last couple of years.
I too am open to this being a horrible movie. Wow. Just on the record.
Okay. Well, if you have that attitude, then. So I'm willing to admit that maybe it's not a perfect movie, but I think I'm still going to love it because it's funny and you'll see.
I unfortunately will. So now I've got a question because you mentioned like, okay, so you wanted to be a material girl. Uh-huh. Like you were young when this movie came out. So how did you even come across this movie? Did you come across it later or?
So, okay, it was 1985. Mm-hmm. And so how old was I in 1985?
You would be under 10.
Oh, wow. I like how you're not telling everybody my real age. It's very gentlemanly of you. So I know my parents didn't take me to see this movie in the theater because I was under 10. And I know I probably didn't see it on TV because back then you had to wait a really long time for a movie to come to TV. So I think what probably happened was that, again, last time I talked about my grandmother, Grandma Betty, she, whenever I would go spend time at her house, like the week on my vacay, she would take me to the video store and she would let me rent whatever I wanted. And so I'm pretty sure that's how I saw Desperately Seeking Susan.
Nice. I loved your grandma Betty. She was so awesome. Plus, I didn't realize she was your movie enabler. So my family movie enabler was my Aunt Linda, actually. Mm. So that's how I got to see a couple movies that my parents weren't thrilled about, but Aunt Linda was taking me.
So
shout out to Aunt Linda and to Grandma Betty. So.
What movie did Aunt Linda take you to see that you shouldn't have seen?
I want to say RoboCop.
Wow, that is.
I think that was might have been. I think it was RoboCop.
Yeah,
it was either that or Die Hard.
Yikes! Both of the yikes.
Now, I'm a little shocked by this because of just, you know, we both grew up in relatively conservative households. Mm-hmm. So, how did your parents take the Madonna attraction?
Well, it's funny that you asked that. I have a vivid memory of discovering Madonna, actually. So I, at the time that she came out, had a new baby brother. Mm-hmm. And he would get up in the middle of the night and he would cry, like babies do. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to hear it. So I would get up and I would take him to the living room and I would rock him back to sleep. And my parents appreciated it because they got to sleep a little. And so I would be sitting in the living room and I would just kind of turn on MTV at like 3 a.m. And wasn't allowed to really watch MTV. But, I mean, I was doing a service for the family. Mm-hmm. Madonna came on and it was the Borderline video. Mm-hmm. And she was just so cool. And she was just like, what is this style? And I just was like, wow, I really like Madonna. And, you know, like, as you said, she was very controversial. So my parents didn't really want me listening to her. And I didn't understand any of the lyrics anyway. They went way over my head. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, my parents would rather me listen to Debbie Gibson, which was fine. But, you know, they weren't all wet blanket. My my dad's a drummer, so, and he was in several bands, and so they did allow me to buy Cyndi Lauper's She's So Unusual. That was my first cassette tape that I ever bought.
Nice.
So I got to, so she's kind of Madonna adjacent.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, that's it. Now, is that where Time After Time, is that one?
I think so, yeah. Time After Time and Girls Just Wanna Have Fun. Oh, Girls Just Wanna Have Fun.
Nice. Yeah, Time After Time is my go-to. And Girls Wanna Have Fun is another iconic
song. I'm going to impress you.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Do you want to hear my impressive thing that I have to say?
Of course.
So, Girls Just Wanna Have Fun, of course, has a wrestler in it. The guy that had his cheek pierced.
Captain Lou Albano,
yes.
Who at that point was a manager.
Okay.
Previously, he was a pro wrestler. And actually, he was instrumental.
Okay.
For the rock and wrestling connection,
yes,
in the 80s.
Yes.
So it should. Do you want the Wendy Richter tangent?
I don't.
Do you want to? Okay.
No, we could keep this tight.
Yeah, when it comes to Borderline, great song. I think my first Madonna movie, mm-hmm, that I saw her in was actually a really bit part in a movie called Vision Quest, which is a movie about like a high school wrestler who,
okay,
meets an older woman
you
of the world.
Stop.
Oh, I think I figured out. Okay, so I think we have a future entry, Vision Quest. So, okay, so but enough about Madonna.
Yes.
I Hate My Life. Let's move on to
movie
you're gonna
that
love.
That is drastic.
Is Clue. Uh-huh. I can't wait for you to see this movie. So, a true story. I mentioned this before. I thought I was going to impress you when we were first going out. And
normally
so
you do.
I saw the movie Clue DVD, mm-hmm, hadn't seen it in decades, and was like, oh, of course she loves this movie, and she's going to be so impressed because I know her taste. It's a movie that we're both going to love and have good memories of, and uh-huh, I gave it to you, and you opened it, and you were like, oh.
Thank you.
Clue. Thanks.
And it's been on the shelf ever since.
It
I
has
haven't
been.
Got rid of it.
It has a place of honor.
Is it still
covered in dust?
In the cellophane? I know you grabbed it off the shelf.
Oh, the cellophane's coming off, baby. We're watching
wow.
that movie. I think you're going to love it. It's
all right.
Smart cast.
We'll see.
All right.
We shall see.
Let's check it out.
All right. We just watched Desperately Seeking Susan.
Yes, we did. We saw Desperately Seeking Susan. I can now cross that off the list as
wow.
a movie I've seen.
Okay.
There were some good parts. I mean, I went in so double thumbs down. Like, that is a movie I
well,
would
you didn't
never
know,
watch.
You like, didn't even know anything about it.
Which, if you know me, is incredibly odd. Like, I had... I had no idea Roseanne Arquette was in this movie. Like, I had no idea. I knew not. I was
or
like,
Stephen Wright.
Oh, my gosh.
Which
Stephen.
Was so hard for me to keep from you.
Thank you for that. Was a great
I was
surprise.
Like,
I love
God,
that.
I'm not going to say anything.
What did you think about it? Did you, because you haven't seen it in a long time, right? So how did it hold up?
It's been a couple of years. I watched it a couple of years ago.
Okay.
You know, I still love it.
Nice.
There were a lot of things that I was watching and realizing, gosh, when I was younger, I had no idea what they were talking about. So there was, you know, a lot of stuff that went over my head. You know, it was funny because when I was younger, I was thinking about this. I thought that if it was in a movie, then that the logic was completely perfect because they wouldn't make a movie that didn't have perfect logic. And it must be my problem that I don't get certain things.
Oh,
and
nice.
I was thinking about that today.
Ah.
Because I remember a couple of movies, I'd be like, wow, that doesn't make any sense. But, I mean, they wouldn't make a movie if it didn't make sense. So it must be my problem.
It's a patriarchy,
I'm a little
man.
Kid.
Yeah.
I don't know. So it was just funny that I realized that. Because, yeah, there are some things that, you know, the story, they speak to each other in personal ads.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big flaw there. Because, you know, if you're going to only speak to someone in personal ads, like, that's leaving a lot up to chance and the universe. And so there are some flaws in the logic that you
mm-hmm.
just kind of have to go with. And that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But it was fun. And again, when I watch movies and I've seen them a bunch of times, like there are things that I always remember, like little things like her walking down the street eating Cheetos and she's got gloves on, or the fact that she went, you know, out in public and she had garter belts and thigh highs and men's boxers.
Her interpretation of clothing, the whole movie was kind of like, what?
Or the scene where she's like blow drying her armpits, you know, at the
bus
station.
Yeah.
So just like things things like that, or the fact that, like, I remember being younger and not understanding why she had silverware in her suitcase, like, but it's silver, so she stole it.
Yeah, so she can valuable. Hawk it.
Yeah, so there was a lot of things I didn't understand, but things that I wait for those parts of the movie, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was fun for me. You know, I think it really helped her that she was, you know, this up-and-coming sensation, and it was the Madonna totally. Movie. Like, that's why we all went and saw it.
Okay, so just to
but
kind
yeah,
of...
yeah, so it held up.
Just to kind of back up. So if you're like me and have never seen Desperately Seeking Susan, mm-hmm. it centers around a woman named Roberta, played by Rosanna Arquette, who is a desperate housewife. She has married a dud of a guy. Her life is just boring. And
well, he sells hot tubs.
Yeah, and you know he's a sleazeball from the beginning. It's not one of these suffering husbands.
Yeah.
So if you had, like, put in a sentence that it's about Roberta, a desperate housewife who gets a second chance of life by being mistaken for a bohemian named Susan. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of like, if you did it, like, in a sentence, that what's
that's a
movie
very
about.
Broad sentence, but yes.
Well, yes, because it's a log line. So that's So that's basically if I had to write a log line for it, that's how I would do it. So yeah. it starts with Rosanna Arquette, who we see very quickly as a romantic, and just life is just kind of black and white for her. And one thing that makes her feel alive is these personal sections. It's kind of like missed connections on Craigslist. Mm-hmm. There's these ads she's been following that always start with Desperately Seeking Susan. So she always just wishes that she would be able to have a life like that. She sees an ad and it's in her city. So she's going to get a chance to see Susan. Cut to Susan. Now, Susan is played by Madonna. And she is this kind of artful dodger, bohemian, does whatever she wants type of, you know, she's...
Trouble follows her wherever she goes.
Yeah, and she kind of does whatever she wants, whoever she wants, whenever she wants. And everyone in the movie is totally cool with that. So
Even her boyfriend.
So what ends up happening is we cut to this bedroom where obviously sheets are thrown off. There's a guy who's asleep. Yeah. And so she's just rifling through his stuff. And she's taking the silverware, and she comes across these earrings, which are kind of gaudy, but she's just taking anything worth the value.
They're Egyptian artifact earrings, Keith.
And I'm not an Egyptologist, so I don't know how how valid that interpretation,
how authentic
those would be. But anyway, so she takes the stuff, and she's taken off because she was fun. It was fun, but
she's
done.
She got her personal ad.
She got a personal ad. It's like, oh, okay, you know, Jimmy's back in town. So she leaves the guy. Now, as she's leaving the guy with all this stuff, she accidentally drops her suitcase for a second. And this super creepy guy, Will Patton, who, if you don't know who he is, he's usually this big, stocky, weird guy. He's got shocked peroxide blonde hair.
And a bald spot.
But anyway, so... He's walking the other direction and sees her distinctive jacket. Doesn't really see her face, but sees this distinctive jacket with a pyramid on the back of it. And as soon as I saw him, do you remember what I said?
Well, I just laughed because you're like, oh, he's going to kill that guy in the hotel room.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, how did you know that?
Oh, yeah. So it was so clear to me.
I'm
so,
not dumb.
So she
I
goes.
Swear.
So you were young when you saw the movie. Susan goes to meet Jimmy. They meet in the park, and they're this classic kind of, like, not quite, I don't know who the analogous is. It's not Bonnie and Clyde. They don't do real crime together, but they're both kind of wild. And she sees that, oh my gosh, this guy I was just with, he got thrown out of a window last night. Oops.
And oh, so funny me.
Oh, funny me. This just happens around me.
And at the time, Miss Roberta has shown up and is watching
from afar.
Meet.
Yeah. So what happens is the musician Jimmy only sees her for a second, tries to get her to go on the road, and she's like, "Ah, pass for a second. You know, let me know when you're back
in
town.
It's boring. You're working."
So he takes off, and Madonna goes around just to do whatever Madonna, the carefree bohemian, does, and Roberta goes total Fatal Attraction and is
you kept asking me, oh, is this going to be single white female? Is this Fatal Attraction? What is this?
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was like, I can't tell.
I was like, Madonna's going to make her immediately. I don't know where this is going to go. So anyway, in the midst of this, she goes to a
consignment shop.
A consignment. There That's we go. What it is. Consignment. So
words.
So she sees boots that she loves, super gaudy.
Sparkly.
So she just almost accidentally steals them because she's just been stealing stuff the whole time. And the guy stops her, but she's like, hey, why don't we trade for this jacket? It was worn by Jimi Hendrix. And so the guy decides to go for it. So as soon as...
And Miss Roberta is in the clothes rack.
Yeah, just watching. Embarrassingly so easy to spot. And so Madonna's got her boots, and so she's fine. So she takes off. And Roberta, of course, being single white female, buys the jacket. She finds a locker key. For where, you know, clearly where...
Because Susan didn't take any of her personal items with her when she surrendered the jacket. She just left everything in the pocket.
Because she's bohemian. That's just what she does.
Like, I don't need pockets.
Who needs that? Who needs things? So she sees the key and she's like, oh, Susan probably needs this. So she puts her own ad saying, you know, desperately seeking Susan, about a key, a stranger, something like that. So Madonna is... excited because she needs that key to get her stuff.
Yeah, all of her stuff is...
And so it's at the same park that it was before, but guess who else is looking at the personals? Is the creepy dude, okay? And so the creepy dude's going to show up. The other person who sees this is Jimmy. So Susan, so the guy who's like, doesn't care who she's with or whatever, is like, hey.
Who is this guy?
So he calls up his friend Des, played incredibly well by Aidan Quinn. Mm-hmm. And says, hey, can you just go and watch and make sure she's okay? You know, the last guy she was with got thrown out a window. Can you make sure she's fine?
And Des has nothing else to do.
No, he's only in the middle of being a projectionist showing him a bad 60s movie, like a bad 60s science fiction movie.
He's got a job.
Mm-hmm. So they're all going to meet at this park. And so what ends up happening is the creepy dude is the one who finds Roberta wearing the jacket, which he remembers seeing in the hotel. And he needs to get those earrings back because they are priceless.
They're Egyptian.
In the midst of him basically trying to semi-abduct her.
Oh, he's just so creepy. He asks her, do you want some candy? Ugh!
Yeah. In the midst of that, she kind of pulls away. And as she pulls away... they end up kind of scuffling a little bit, and she backs up into a lamppost. And the director makes very sure that we see
it is in
her
slow
purse
motion.
Slowly moving down and falling off the pier into the ocean. So, of course, what has happened is Roberta has lost her memory. Aidan shows up to help her because he knew about the jacket, so he thinks that she is Susan.
And everybody knows about this jacket.
Everyone knows about the jacket. And that kind of starts Roberta's adventure of trying to figure out who she is and is she Susan or is she not. And there's a whole lot of other stuff that happens. But this movie is incredibly complex.
It's so complex.
This is in some ways, it's similar to Clue in some ways. In that there's just so many moving parts. And it is, looking back, like... leaps of logic are needed, but it's actually, I think, is a pretty decent script for all the moving parts of what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
So was that a good setup to kind of
that
point of the movie?
Yeah, that was great. That's basically what happened. And you have to explain it like that because it's so complicated.
Yeah, that's why the log line is just like, that movie could be about anything. It's like, there's so much going, and because there's so much that happens afterwards. Yeah. So
were there things that you liked about the movie?
Yeah, there were things I liked. One of the things that I was not expecting, which I really liked about it, is that it was a kind of a love letter to a New York City I've never been to. I've heard about and I've read about New York City in the 80s and like in the 70s, late 80s, mid 80s. And it reminds
like a trash
me of
dump.
Yeah, what I've read about Madonna's story is kind of like that's kind of her experience from what I understand, like the one or two articles I've read. And so it was interesting to see New York like that. It was not, there was no gentrification. It was very seedy.
There was literally trash in the street.
The club scene, very interesting. And from what I understand, that's like how Madonna started, was basically finding, creating, playing those types of clubs. And so it was interesting to see Madonna in that element.
Dancing to her own music.
It was a good song. She's got a really good catalog. So, and that was... Get into the groove. I am horrible at song lyrics, so
no.
I'm going to be doing this a lot. So get in the groove. Great song. And
don't
she
ever
was...
try to shop for wedding songs with Keith. He's like, that song's great. Yeah, it's about breaking up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Don't go breaking my heart. Some of the actors I thought were great. It's also kind of this funny, quirky movie. So I think Aidan Quinn was really good. Mm-hmm. I think that Rosanna Arquette was very good. I thought... I was surprised how little Madonna was in the movie, actually, because I thought it was Madonna's movie. Yeah.
And I just say, when I was younger, I was super disappointed that Madonna was not the main character.
As you mentioned, the ensemble cast was, it was really fun to see a lot of those people. Like, I thought Stephen Wright was, oh, that was so awesome. I love Stephen Wright. I wish there was more Stephen Wright in there, but then again, it was a perfect amount because he was just...
I mean, he had some gems.
Yeah. There's this whole... Again, not enough time to go through everything. There's a whole Magic Club angle. Mm-hmm. And everybody in there was just from the band to John, from John Turturro is an MC. Oh, my gosh. It's like, just think Magic Dying, Dying Magic Club.
See, and the light club, but it's a 70s magic club.
Yeah. And it's like there's always a guy in a tux and the and
with
the
ruffled
oh my god
bad magic
that was kind of crazy. As I've gotten older, what I've realized is that there are movies that aren't for me, like they're not made for me. At least when I was younger, or like when I was in my early 20s, like doing movie reviews and stuff like that, like everything felt like it was made for me. And like if I didn't like it, it was because it was a bad movie. It wasn't that oh, by the way, that movie's not for you. And I think that's what kind of like this movie was directed by a woman.
It was written by one, too.
So I think as well. And so it's not made for me. It was made for Corey. You know, it was made for people a bit older than her. And so that I guess, archetype of what Madonna represents in that movie, I think was really important for a lot of women. To see someone like that. It's like Captain Marvel when that came out, like a couple of years ago. Like I would listen to some of my students go like, oh, it was a horrible movie. I'm like, it wasn't written for you. It's a good movie. If you can take yourself out of a male dominated mindset, it's like, it's a good movie and it's a decent movie for guys to watch of any stripe. But for some women watching that movie, like they got things and I see some of it. I think when it came to the things I didn't necessarily like is I understand the archetype. I understand it's important. However, I personally didn't like Madonna in that role. And that might have just been my personal taste. But I didn't quite buy her in the character. And that's totally my fault. Because from what I understand, that was her. I mean, it was just her with the volume turned up in a lot of ways. Actually, when I was doing just a little bit of research, number one, I was shocked that it wasn't written for her. Mm. That originally they wanted Goldie Hawn.
Oh my
and
gosh,
Diane Keaton.
What?
They wanted Diane Keaton to be Roberta and they wanted Goldie Hawn.
That is so funny because when we were talking about it, just a tiny bit, we weren't talking too much. We were talking about like who else could like do this movie and have the movie, you know, be successful. And I was like, oh, Goldie Hawn, no.
It's a super tough role.
Yeah.
Super tough role to cast.
Yeah.
And it has still a cult classic reputation. I think it has to, you know, Madonna was absolutely the right role. I could see like a young Angelina Jolie or a young Rosario Dawson. They both kind of had like a little bit of toughness, like especially Rosario Dawson. Mm-hmm. Super hot. And like,
whoa,
but you don't want to, but you wouldn't want to cross her. So
should I step out of the road?
No. She's, you know. So the other person who I was thinking about, like just Camila Cabello.
Oh, Camila Cabello.
Cabello.
How dare you?
I know. My great and humble apologies. Like I could see her doing it. But again, it's not a movie made for me. And I think at the time, when you look at who was available.
Madonna was it.
I mean, she was the right choice for it. And it totally helped. It was one of those interesting times where I think the movie totally helped Madonna. And I think Madonna totally helped this movie. Because again, I don't know anybody else. I don't think it would have been the cultural sensation it was.
I can't see anybody else beside Madonna being Susan.
I totally understand why you loved it. I can understand why it's so formative for a lot of women. And so I start...
Oh,
double thumbs down. And so I would put one definitely in the middle. Mm. We put one definitely in the middle. And then I've got the other one kind of like, Yeah, it's trying to get to the middle, but it's kind of toggling between middle and thumbs down.
Your
Like
own
I, again, it's not a movie that was written with me in mind, which is totally fine. So, but yeah, those are my thoughts on Desperately Seeking Susan. Before we get started, mm-hmm. Clue by definition is a mystery, Corey. So let's.
Is that what I was watching?
That is a bad sign that you don't realize that's what we just watched. But how much do you feel like spoiling for our wonderful audience?
Well, I mean, I don't want to spoil it, but I'm gonna take some liberties. I can't promise you that I'm not gonna spoil it for you. So if you haven't seen it and you really do want to see it, I suggest that you stop, go watch it, and then come back, because I don't know. I am a loose cannon, so I might just
spill it all.
Spill it. I'm gonna all spill right. the tea.
That's fair. You have been warned. So
yes. So Keith, mm-hmm. The first part of this is to talk about, did this movie hold up for you?
I think it, in general, it did. The thing is that normally we try to pick movies where we're like double thumbs up and the other person is double thumbs down. I, in all honesty, I have to say it was still really good. I still really liked it, but it's not that double thumbs up for me anymore. Aww. So it's kind of like one thumb up, definitely. And then one thumb kind of like in the middle of up and to okay. the middle.
So it's like kind of like idling.
It was made in the 80s and there was a different style of filmmaking. So mm-hmm. a bit slow mm-hmm. in the beginning, takes a while to get going. I can see why modern audiences might not like it.
So I can understand totally fully why you like this movie, because mm-hmm. you grew up in a house where your mom has all of the Agatha Christies.
She does.
Still on the shelf.
Oh, yeah.
Like her bookshelf has, I didn't know you could do double rows.
Oh, no, that's just the Agatha. We have a Dick Francis section. Yes, we have a Sherlock Holmes section.
Right. So you and your mother love, like, you know, crime procedurals. And I've tried to sit and watch them with you guys. But I like true crime. I like the true stuff. And it's because I like the forensics and I like psychotic brains. Like, that's, like, I have a weird fascination with that. So that's why I like true crime. I have just kind of never really gotten into mysteries. My brain, I feel like my brain is different than everybody else's. Like, when I had to go get my teaching credential, mm-hmm. I had to take this math test.
Oh, I remember.
And I had thought that I was finished with math. Like, my whole life, math has just been just, I have a learning disability. So, mm-hmm. Like, logic and spatial and like abstract like thinking is really hard for me. It like gives me a panic attack. Like last time mm-hmm. we were talking about like the time that we were playing poker and having an attack inside my head.
The funny thing is that you can do numbers or you could do words. And when words and numbers come together, that's when things don't compute always.
So like if you remember when we were studying math and like I needed it to be like linear and I needed it to make sense, and when a problem all of a sudden didn't work like how it worked before, what did I do?
You almost flipped the table. You almost quit on yes. the spot on your dream of being a teacher. She was a trooper and we kind of got through it.
Yes.
And how'd you do on your test?
Well, I passed by 1 point.
Woohoo! And now you can be a teacher.
And now I'm a teacher. But so that's just kind of where I'm at. Mm-hmm. So abstract thinking and like mysteries just have always been really hard for me to kind of like wrap my head around. So like Keith and I did like a murder mystery dinner show. Mm-hmm. Keith still does it. I stopped doing it after I had our child. Like even during that, like, you know, at that very end, you would play detectives. It was an improv show. You'd get the audience involved. And so at the very end, if you were a detective, you had to do what was called a summation, so that everybody in the audience, you know, they were trying to solve this thing. And so you were telling them all of the clues and how everything hooks up and whatever. And I would just let the other detective do the whole summation. And I would just go, yeah, Right.
Yes, that was usually my job.
Yes.
Is usually the other detective would look at me and say, "You know the summation, right?" I'd be like, "Oh yeah, no problem."
Oh
And they'd be
yeah.
just, that's.
You were the summation
See, I
kid.
think this is interesting because yes, you are so fascinated, and like I feel like if I would just tell you they were real, I have a feeling
I would have
you would
more.
flip the switch. But anyway,
Yeah.
okay.
So
So
anyway,
things aren't looking good for this movie right
well,
off the bat.
the cast did a good job. There were some running jokes and gags that, I laughed when there was like some snarky lines. Like I think at one point they're like, "Oh, why is the car stopped?" And it's, "Oh, 'cause it's scared to death," or something like that. Towards the end, when they were reenacting every possible scenario, I was just like, my head was spinning. And the whole time that, like, I didn't understand what was going on yet, it was just like I was having like a panic attack because I was just like, oh my gosh, I don't understand. I know I will. So that's kind of like when the time that I accidentally started watching Dead to Me, because I thought it was a comedy, and it's an amazing, wonderful show. But I had to binge the entire series that night because I needed to make sure that everything was okay.
Yeah, I think Clue is very much, is there a crime that's happening which will have some internal logic that makes some sort of sense? Yeah. Is that 95% of the show? No, it's not. So it's very much,
Yeah.
it's not, yeah, it is very not a procedural, very not true crime.
So just with all that being said, okay, that's where my head is at. I did make a connection. I was in an Agatha Christie like revival play called well,
Yeah,
we
stage
meet.
reading
It
and
was a
yeah.
stage read. It was a different name that they gave it, but it's based off of Agatha Christie's Ten Little Indians, which the title does not
Age
age
well,
well.
no, but okay.
But yeah, all these people are being blackmailed and they're being brought into this place and locked in, and one by one they get picked off.
Which is like 90% of novels of
Yeah.
like crime novels
Oh,
is that type of
okay.
like, oh, everyone's in the same room and we're having to
And then
figure
who
out the
did
mur
it?
and is someone gonna
Oh,
die? And
okay.
so
So Tim Curry plays Wadsworth the butler. And fun little fact, Keith. I went to, I don't know if you know this, I went to Performing Arts High School.
Oh, I am aware of that fact.
But actually went with Tim Curry's niece.
No way.
Yeah. But anyway, just name dropping.
Someone's niece.
So we got Tim Curry, we got Martin Mull. Funny thing, so Martin Mull, Michael McKean, and Howard Hessman are in this. And the funny thing about those three guys is, to me, they are very analogous of each other. And I'm always like, wait, which one is it? It's kind of like the Dermot Mulroney, Dylan McDermott. Like, wait, which one is it? Then Mrs. Peacock is played by Eileen Brennan, who is the captain in Private Benjamin, which I remembered. I loved that movie,
Oh
and
my
then it got
God.
turned into a TV series. So that's a movie we need to revisit.
Oh my gosh.
I was really surprised that Christopher Lloyd was in it,
Yes.
and then I was disappointed that he was a creep.
Total creep.
I hadn't known Leslie Ann Warren to be so like vampy. I always kind of thought of her differently. And then we have Madeline Kahn, the queen.
Yes.
I love her. So she was in it. So we have all those people. And then Colleen Camp is the maid. And did you know that she played Mr. Vanderhoff's wife on Wayne's World?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, because I was like, Colleen Camp, why do I know that name? And so I looked it up, and that's who she is. So first off, Wadsworth shows up, and all the guests start arriving. And as you said, it is kind of a slow burn to get all of
It
the people.
oh my gosh, I think they used to be literally required to show all of the credits ahead of
At the
time at the
beginning.
beginning,
Well, and I
and that
always,
shifted.
yes, I wonder when. Because I thought it and that ended way before the 80s, but I guess some movies you see, it's still.
Yeah, I think
I
it was
wonder
kind of the
when that
traditional. I
changed.
think it might have been the Star Wars crawl. I think
Oh.
that's why, because Star Wars, George Lucas lost either membership in the producing guild or the directors guild, because he was like, that's stupid.
Because he didn't do it.
So he wouldn't do it. And so he actually,
and he saved us.
And then it, yeah.
From having to watch
and
credits.
And it became one of the most popular movies of all time. And so they're like, oh, we're going to give you back your membership.
They're all sitting at dinner and they're all wondering, like, why are we here? What is our connection? Mm-hmm. And like the women are still wearing their hats and their jackets. And I was like, it was bothering me. And then I realized, oh, well, they don't really want to be there. They want to leave mm-hmm. as soon as possible. So that's why they still have all of their jackets and hats and such on. Mm-hmm. I did really like the dining room wallpaper.
I have no clue what it was.
But oh my gosh. It was like a Tiffany blue and had like kind of like a gray like Moroccan yeah, okay, kind of okay. like. Yeah. So I did notice that and that I really liked it.
Okay. That's a bad sign when that's a good thing. Where it's like, what'd you like about the movie? Well, the wallpaper was, in a 5 second scene.
Well, no, I am appreciating the set design.
There you go.
The set designer
I like that.
Picked that wallpaper.
Well, someone's got their BA in theater.
That's right. However, the costumes, lots of cleavage that we had to like I just was watching it and going, gosh, that must be so uncomfortable to try to keep your girls, you know, while you're running around through secret passages and stuff. I was just like, oh, gosh.
I would imagine there was a lot of tape on set. I would imagine there was quite a, which is true. And that's part of the running. It's the 80s. So it's yeah, the 80s true. Spoofing the 50s. So yeah. There is going to be some.
There was a lot of bouncing there, girls.
We would have been safe in any swimming pool. So yes.
Which was fine. But I was just like, God, get that girl a t-shirt so she can relax. anyway, so they all, you know, they're there. Michael McKean, I just have to say this right now. By far, he was my favorite thing about this movie.
I thought he was excellent.
He was.
On second viewing, you know, since I haven't seen it since, like, I was less than 10. I mean, I really appreciated him more than I ever have before. Case in point, this is actually my first time that Tim Curry, this was the first film I actually saw where I like recognized Tim Curry. I'm like, oh, who's that guy? That guy's really good.
Well, and my first time, I don't know when Annie was made with
I'm sure that was
Carol
before
Burnett,
that.
But that's where I know Tim Curry from, sense. Was Annie. Yeah. I loved him as Rooster and Annie. So that's, and of course, I didn't know about Rocky Horror Picture until I was in high school.
No, we were sheltered. We were sheltered.
And my friend showed it to me. But yeah. That's another
middle school
story.
For me. Yeah, that's
oh,
another
wow,
story.
Middle school.
Let's do the time warp. Maybe. So
it's just a step to the right. So anyway, yeah, he was hilarious. So the first thing I think made me laugh out loud mm-hmm. was the cook decides to just whack this gong as hard as she possibly can and scares the crap out of Michael McKean and his drink goes flying out of his hands and I think hits Mrs. Peacock in the face.
Probably.
He was like spooked and it was funny.
As soon as that happened in the scene, I'm like, I am very surprised Corey doesn't own a gong. Like, for that specific reason, I could totally see you doing that.
So, no, because we
not
had
where
a
we
gong.
Not where we live not where we live now. But
no,
I could
if
see.
We had a gong, our child would be smacking it
she'd
all
be,
day.
She'd be a gonger.
Yeah, can't handle. She already makes enough noise with nothing like that. So
she's wonderful, though.
She is, but she's very noisy.
Rambunctious.
Yes. So they're all at the table. They barely ate, which I guess makes sense because this for the purpose of what this is.
Yeah, it's not.
So then they, of course, retire to the study to smoke and drink. And they find out that they're all been blackmailed and Wadsworth is working for someone who's blackmailing them. And
he used to work with
used
the blackmailer.
To work. Yeah. So this is where I was like, So then this guy comes in named Mr. Body. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the actor, but he was new at acting.
It was when we reviewed Mannequin, there was this thing where the Clue is also very much an over-the-top kind of like farcical type movie. And
very noisy.
One of the keys to that, you know, in Dinner Detective is you're in a farcical comedy. You cannot act like you are mm-hmm. because it's too much to be on top of each other.
But however, no one told that to his eyebrows. I was just like, oh, is he sinister? Because his eyebrows are very sinister.
You know what? He was just, he made a choice. The director didn't
the
reel
wrong
him.
One.
Director didn't reel him in. And
well, so then, then ensues a tussle, and it was funny because I was, you know, watching the stage combat, and they were just kind of missing each other.
They
Which
are,
I guess maybe that was a choice
as far as stage combat goes, they are very good comedians.
Yes.
I would put it that way.
But I did feel like I was in stage combat 101.
Or minus 101.
Or minus 101. To that note, I think I would probably have liked it better if it was a stage production.
Oh,
I could see with all of the running around and all of the physical comedy, I feel like for me, it just didn't read well to me as a movie. But if it was a stage production, like it was very rumors, like people coming in, coming out, coming in, coming out. So kind of Neil Simon, kind of like Noises Off, like a little farce.
Well, and I didn't realize at that time, but when I do the summation in Dinner Detective, I am flat out ripping the crap out of what they do in Clue. Like that whole high energy, I'm running, you've seen like I'm running around the room, I'm reenacting stuff.
Well,
I'm
and like, literally he's reenacting, he's using Michael McKean, in fact, as like some of the dead bodies.
He was hilarious.
And he did amazing. Like one time I got to perform for Edward Albee. For it was.
Oh wait, hold on! You just dropped that right there.
I dropped it.
Would you like that back, please?
Edward Albee. But we did a scene from one of his plays, and I got to play a dead body, and it was the best role I ever had because I just was a dead body, and I was just being thrown around, and it was really fun. But Michael McKean did an amazing job as the dead body.
I know this movie did something you hate, but yeah, the summation for this movie is like. My goodness, probably like 15 minutes or more.
When we first put the movie on, it had the screen that was like, oh, you can either have this ending or you can have like these endings. I was just like, I need to have a concrete ending. Like, I hate when there's a director's cut because I'm just like, no, I want to know what is the ending that you wanted for this movie, and that is what it is. So when there's three different choices, it makes my head explode.
If you're going to do that, I like the way that Clue did it. Because again, to spoil it all, you go to the DVD menu and you can either go to the left and it will pick one of three endings for you. Or you can see it like I did in the theater. The first two endings were like, hey, this is how it happened. Or it could have happened like this. And then the final one. They say definitively in the title card, this is what really happened. And that one was the best written. And I'm guessing they did that partially because if you played the board game Clue, which I know you never would. Of course, there's different. Right. Anybody could be the killer.
Right.
And so that way they were able to.
Because it could play out any number of ways if it's a board game.
Exactly.
Which makes complete sense to me right now that they were tipping their hat to the fact that it's a board game.
But I love that they did say a definitive, this is what really happened. And it was the best one.
I think I was too busy like hyperventilating.
I think so. You tend to black out in moments like that.
And I totally get why you loved it. I think you are a little bit older than I am.
Wow. Just throwing that out there. I would like my oatmeal now.
So the other thing about me is that I have this wild, crazy imagination. It does not take much for me to create scenarios and whatever. Mm-hmm. So when I was younger, like, I wasn't allowed to watch the news. I wasn't allowed to watch Scooby-Doo or, like, the Smurfs or anything like
Scooby-Doo?
That.
Scooby-Doo?
Well, yeah, because I would watch it and I would have nightmares.
Oh, all right. Well, do you have a final verdict on Clue? Like, so if you started double thumbs down.
I was double thumbs down because it was a mystery.
That's true. With multiple endings.
With multiple endings. I would say that I'm going to have, it did have some good moments, so I'm going to have a thumb that is in the middle and toggling. I'm going to have a thumb that's in the middle and then a thumb that's down, but that's toggling toward the middle.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, yeah. So that is Clue. We just want to thank you so much for listening. If you would like to see pictures and extras, you can check out our He Saw, She Saw Facebook page.
There you go.
And you can definitely like us wherever you listen to your podcasts and follow or
subscribe.
Or I don't know how.
Whatever
that all
you crazy
works.
Kids do with podcasts.
I don't
podcasts.
Know what that means. But if you like do some one of those things, then it helps us to get out there a little bit more. So right now we're on Spotify, Breaker, Anchor, and I am working on getting us on Apple Podcast. Oh, and I just found out we're on Google Podcast.
Nice.
So we are reaching the airwaves, baby.
We've been Googled.
We've been giggled. So no, I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. But yeah, so visit our Facebook page and yeah. Oh, what are we going to do next week?
The last two episodes we've done the same year.
Yes.
So that was the thing. It's the same year. We've been in the 80s. So we wanted to switch it up.
And do something different.
I was wondering, let's switch genres, because that could be another thing.
Yeah.
We decided to go...
We're going to do...
Musicals. So movie, musical.
Now, I am not known to like musicals.
At all.
So my pick, I'm going to say it's not like a traditional musical.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a movie where they do burst into song mm-hmm. as part of the movie, so it's a musical.
Okay.
But it had a Mr. Johnny Depp in it, and mm-hmm. so I watched it several times. It's a crybaby. Directed by John Waters.
Okay.
Which when I was younger, I didn't understand. It was a little off and strange and bizarre for me, and mm-hmm. I didn't know why. And then when
first John Waters film?
It was my first John Waters film.
Okay.
And so then when I got older, I realized, oh, okay, John Waters. He's bizarre.
Is this like Hairspray bizarre, or is this like Pink Flamingos?
It's like
bizarre?
In the middle of Pink Flamingos and Hairspray.
Okay.
More towards Pink Flamingos.
All right. Okay. So I'm going to watch Crybaby. And then what I decided to go with is so that was like 1990. So I'm going to fast forward us about a decade into 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Into a musical that I loved, and I think kind of opened the door to, oh, by the way, you can do musicals now. I think they did such a good job with it and kind of opened it up.
Oh, just as movies in general.
As like, this is viable again. Mm-hmm. Like this mm-hmm. is, because there hadn't been a lot before then, and there have been some afterwards. And so that movie is Moulin Rouge. So that movie brings up great memories for me, and I can't wait for you to watch it. So with that, we'll see you guys later.
See ya.
Peace.